105 DGS on KMOX. Thanks for being with us. Gorgeous day out there. It's kind of a perfect day. Low
really
70s.
Nice.
Love the wind. Nice breeze.
This would be every day in my world.
Yeah, me too.
My fantasy world.
Except there'd be more exist. Wolves.
A lot of wolves.
More wolves.
Yeah, I'd have wolf buddies.
Wolves.
Yeah.
Werewolf.
No, we say the L in my world.
Well, you're respectful. I noted something going on that I've been talking about for years now. I've said when it comes to problematic people that to silence them, that sounds more dramatic than what I mean. But to combat them, that sounded more dramatic. You need their people to stand up to them. And we've seen two recent examples of that with Marjorie Taylor Greene and Kristi Noem. That for whatever reason, the right has decided that they are not going to get their way. And Marjorie Taylor Greene was humiliated yesterday when she brought up the motion to vacate, and she got booed and got slapped down. And it wasn't, I think she's, of course, she's trying to spin it like, well, I'm the rebel, I'm the Thomas Paine. People, 200 years from now, they'll write books about me and how I saved the country. No. And then Kristi Noem with the dog and the Kim Jong-un lie. I mean, Newsmax just completely eviscerated her to her face on live television. And then who's my girl? Megyn Kelly. She's going after her for her hair extensions and her...
Oh, wow. See, Megyn Kelly has gotten so nasty in recent years with the
it
way
was bad.
She goes after people's appearances.
She's going
stuff.
After her for Botox and fillers and fake
come
teeth.
On.
She's like you're not even
that.
As pretty as me.
Yeah, well, that's definitely the vibe she gives out.
Yeah.
It's like, Megyn, relax.
I haven't seen any of those, but that's annoying.
But don't you agree? That's if you want someone stopped, their own people. Because, you know, the left can talk about people on the right all day long. People on the right can talk about the left. No one cares. Of
Doesn't
course,
matter.
That's what you're going to do.
Yeah.
You have to stand up. The Christians have to stand up and call out bad Christians. Muslims have to do the same thing for their faith. Atheists have to do the same thing for you know, their worldview.
Yeah. I think a big part of that is being willing to hold yourself to the same standard. I mean, individually. Like, if you will hold yourself to a standard, then your takes on other things matter more. Mm-hmm. Am I saying that the right way?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because if you're like, well, it's all fine if I do it, but then I'm going to criticize someone else, it doesn't hold any water. Nobody's going to listen to you.
It is zero my business, but having kids, it made me sad to hear that Trump has decided to, that Barron, 18-year-old Barron Trump, is going to be a delegate now in Florida. So he will be officially involved in politics, which means he's now open to criticism and attack. And maybe it's a strategy. I would hate to think that Trump is so low that he would put his son out there as bait, knowing that people are going to attack him and then play the victim. You're 18, you're a grown man. Thomas Paine, this was the second reference, was 18 or 19 on July 4th when they signed the document. But it's no longer 1776. I don't know. It just makes me sad that a young guy like that's going to be
thrown into
the fray.
Well, don't you think he wants to do it?
I don't know. I don't know anything about him. I've never heard the kid say a word.
Yeah.
I highly doubt they would put him in that position if he was not asking.
Well, I doubt
to do
his
it.
Mom would allow it.
Exactly. Exactly.
You'd hope anyway, yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking today about, and I never talk about this, and I never really think about it that much, but how absolutely fascinating and critically important the public school system is. It just trips off your tongue. Oh, yeah, you know, public schools, the public school system, the curriculum, school boards. And I never gave it that much thought, maybe because I wasn't an academic. You know, I couldn't have cared less as a kid. My parents weren't into it. No one was going to PTA meetings in the Glover household. But think about that. When we set up the public school system, whenever we did, and a bunch of people had to decide, here's what's important. Here's what we're going to teach them. They're going to go to school between 8 a.m. and 3 p.m. and we're going to teach them reading, writing, and arithmetic. And this is the history we're going to teach them. This is what's important. We're going to teach them home ec and finances and civics and things like that. And I would imagine, I don't know this for a fact, but I would imagine that high school now is very different from what it was when I was in high school, which hasn't been a million years ago. And if we were going to start over again, what do you think you guys would prize? What aspect of our educational system would you say, time to retire this, maybe focus a little more on that? Like I've said how I think your senior year in high school, you shouldn't take a single class. It should all be internships. You've learned what you're going to learn. you go out there and like three internships are going to be mandatory. You're going to do one in the sciences, you're going to do one in the arts, you're going to do one in something else. And then you get to pick a couple more. I want to go work in a lawyer's office. Had I done that for a week, I would have never gone to law school. You know, it's important to find out, just as important, I think, to find out what you don't want to do than what you want to do. Mm-hmm. What would you guys do?
Ooh, what would I get rid of? That's such a good question. I don't know.
I know exactly the things that I would put in. First of all, number one thing would be added to the list, personal finances. You're going to learn about taxes. You're going to learn about money management. You're going to learn about what interest means, so that when you start getting credit cards or when you're thinking about student loans, people lay it out for you. Now, again, that's something that can be done at home, but so are a lot of other things. You can learn how to read social studies books at home, too. You know, we need to do a better job of teaching those things so fewer people do dumb things in their 20s, because that's where you get set back. And I think that would be one. Number two would be critical thinking, learning. And that applies to like social media, the internet, reading news stories, just the ability to filter through opinion and misinformation to get to actual information. It's a skill you can learn. I mean, I learned it. If I can, anybody can. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean that you're never susceptible, but if you can see through the nonsense better because you learn the techniques for doing it and you learn how to look things up, I would start with those two things, and I'd probably spend a little more time. I know it's hard for me because in my high school was not a public school, so we did things a little differently. But I would probably spend less time for kids who don't have the aptitude for certain things and forcing them to do it. Like, if you're not good at math and you're not going to study anything math-related in college or beyond, why are we forcing you to take Algebra 2?
We did that when I was in school. They were not shy about, look, you're not going to be a rocket scientist, but you seem to like cars. Why don't you just go to the shop building and work on that, because you're going to end up being an HVAC guy. You're going to end up working with your hands. They were not shy about doing that in the 80s.
Yeah, and even if it's not that, even if it's just what percentage of students are going to benefit from Algebra 2 more than personal finances? 100% of those kids are going to learn from they're going to need to know personal finances at some point. You're going to need to know taxes and how interest works and all that. And yeah, again, your parents can teach you that, but it's not the same, because our parents can literally teach us anything else that we learn in school too.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're trying to do is make it better so that the average kid starts on a more level playing field when it comes to the things that are definitely going to impact your life.
Did I ever tell you about how I ruined one of Nick's classes?
No.
So Nick went to a private school called the College School, where they're very experimental. Mm. And like, they will build a creek all year, and that's how they learn about science, that kind of thing. You know, very outdoorsy.
Mm-hmm.
And they were doing a class like what you're talking about for personal finance, and everyone had to start a business, and you had to fund it, and you had to sell to each other. It's supposed to go on the entire semester. So Nick and I hatched a plan that instead of eBay, we created Nebay. And I was in radio, and I would give him a bunch of radio prizes and like the big gigantic Hershey bars, and he would have daily auctions. And of course, you got a bunch of like, you know, fourth graders, and you can either spend your money on this fake thing or you can spend your money on getting a 1 pound Hershey bar. And Nick became a multi-trillionaire, and he crashed the economy.
Oh, I say with the fake money.
Yes,
yeah.
With the fake money. They could buy little houses, and they could pay people to build little houses in the woods for them. And Nick was like Mr. Burns. Like, everyone worked for Nick, and they had to shut the whole thing down.
All because of swag from the closet.
All because of swag, yeah, because of radio
closet.
Swag.
Well, it shows what we all like, right?
Isn't it crazy that, you know, Dave, you talk about whenever we invented the public school system, not much has changed since that invention. Like, kids are still sitting at a desk looking at a blackboard or a whiteboard or a smartboard, whatever, being taught by one teacher at the front of the room. I mean, it's just kind of wild that of all the things we've innovated in life, we've just kind of left that alone.
We've also treated it. And again, I get it. This is not a criticism, but it is also, we haven't even reconsidered how long should a school day be? How long should classes be? What's optimal for learning? in part because a lot of it is also kind of daycare.
Babysitting.
Right. Yeah. Like, your parents can go to work, you can go to school, and you don't have to worry about it. So, again, I'm not saying that's a bad thing necessarily, but even within that total structure, maybe there is a better way to get more production and to learn better without just like, you're in this room for this many minutes, for this many hours a day, and that's what we're doing.
When you said that, it made me think of home learning, which made me think of the COVID when every kid was at home on an iPad. You know what I'd forgotten about COVID is that January 6th happened right in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
2021.
I just like, I don't know about you guys, but I have a fuzzy memory of that entire period. And I also think I have watercolored it.
Yes.
That I don't even know how many people died. I couldn't tell you. I couldn't give you a good estimate. But I remember watching television and seeing it. It's this many tens of thousands and it's this many thousand infected and XYZ. And it was so horrible. And people dying without, you know, their loved ones getting to say goodbye. Yeah. And I think it was just so horrible that I just sort of watercolored it.
I totally get it, Dave. I remember whenever it was happening, thinking like, I will never forget this. This is always going to be, you know, a part of my life. And because it was so traumatizing, but I'm the same way. I'm starting to get mixed up on dates and when things happened and, you know, when did we work from home? When did we this? When did we that? It's just, again, it was an incredibly traumatic experience that the entire world went through together. And I think it's perfectly natural to just kind of want to forget about it once we've moved past it.
I was listening to something and they said it was historical. And they said, yeah. And then during the pandemic, I'm like, wow, you lived through a pandemic straight up. Like that happened in your lifetime. Mm-hmm. Crazy. 221 DGS. We have pal Ricky Horton coming up at 245. Chet Pleben's going to be here to give us the updates on the Trump trial at 305. Dave Murray, my buddy Brian McKenna is going to be in studio 4 p.m. talking about what he went through with his mom and Alzheimer's. Let's do some Throwback Thursday.
Yes, 270 years ago in 1754, Benjamin Franklin published America's first ever political cartoon. It was titled Join or Die, and it showed a snake chopped into pieces to motivate the early colonies to unite to fight the French and Indian War. Hmm.
He's fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
I want to watch the Michael Douglas
We're
show.
We're watching it.
Are you?
I'm two episodes in. It's interesting. He's hard to get past sometimes
because he's Michael Douglas.
Yeah. He is just... But the story surrounding it is actually really interesting.
Okay.
About how he's recruiting French aid to get to the American Revolution. I mean, it's really fascinating to see how it goes. And the cast around him is really good. Not that he's not.
Yeah.
He's just very Michael Douglas. He's not very Ben Franklin-y.
Man, history is cool. I enjoyed it whenever I was in school, but now that I'm an adult, I'm just like, I just want to learn everything about the Founding Fathers. I want to learn everything about, like, the World Wars.
It makes me laugh so hard. I've said this before, but Phoebe couldn't care less. And she knows how much I love it. And she's like, Dad, I couldn't care less. If it didn't happen yesterday, I don't want to know. I don't need it in my head. I don't care about the French-Indian Wars. I just don't care. I'm like, oh, you're 19.
You know what's really fascinating was the Netflix, the Frontline documentary. It's like 9 episodes about the Cold War. And but it's tying all of it into what's happening with Russia and Ukraine now. And every episode starts with that and kind of, but the whole thing is a buildup. Essentially to how Putin became Putin and how he got to this position and how he essentially got his power by telling the billionaires, give me half of what you have or I will prosecute you and put you in jail.
That'll work.
Because he did it to the richest man in Russia.
And it worked.
And that guy is out now, but he's exiled. He doesn't live there anymore.
I've heard from several people who I trust that Putin is the richest man in the world.
Yeah, that's what the people that were interviewed were saying.
Yeah.
And one of them even said an interesting thing. Is like, he doesn't care about political power, the image of Russia. He just wants more.
Back to Throwback Thursday. 125 years ago in 1899, the lawnmower was patented.
Hmm.
It's an exciting invention.
Mm-hmm.
Thank the Lord. What did they do before?
I guess they just walked through tall grass.
I mean, is this the motorized one?
Or
is it the hand pushing
one? I'm assuming it's the push.
How long ago was it?
125 years ago.
Yeah, that's pushy.
Yeah, so he just lived in a field.
Mm. Yeah, pretty much.
Everybody's lawn.
Can you imagine
like
the first time someone used it and you're like, holy hell.
Oh my gosh, I can walk through here.
This is great.
Probably had to use like a scythe before just to build a path.
110 years ago in 1914, President Woodrow Wilson established the first ever Mother's Day. Coming up on Sunday, everybody, just as a reminder, get your mom your presents now. 44 years ago in 1980, the original Friday the 13th was released. It's just on par with the rest
of these
stories.
Right?
Friday the 13th, yes, that is Jason.
Yep. I was never into those. I saw most of them, but it just, like, I don't know, didn't grab me.
They're not, I don't think they're as good as some of the other ones.
I've never been afraid of people.
Yeah.
You know, I've always said, like, I could leave my doors open at night and stupidly and not worry, but give me a ghost or a demon, which I don't believe either exists, and I'm freaked out all night.
Yeah, I mean, like, Jason was kind of that. He was the undead.
32 years ago in 1992, the final episode of The Golden Girls aired.
Never saw an episode.
What?
Nope.
But I thought you thought all those ladies were hot.
No, only Bea Arthur and Adrienne Barbeau. By the way, did you see that a nude painting of Bea Arthur just sold for $1.9 million?
Ooh, it's got to hurt your pocketbook, Dave. 19 years ago in 2005, Renee Zellweger and Kenny Chesney were secretly married. Renee filed for an annulment 4 months later, citing fraud. You guys remember when that happened?
I wouldn't have until you said that.
It was all over the, you know, the cover of like People and stuff at the time. And I was like, oh, what's going
on? What fraud did he commit?
A lot of people think that he might be gay. I don't know if that's rude to say on the radio, but that was the big rumor swirling at the time. Was that he lied about his sexuality before they got married.
Jeez.
And 4 years ago in 2020, Little Richard lost his battle with bone cancer. He was 87 years old. That's my throwback Thursday. What? What are you laughing about?
I was still trying to process the divorce thing.
The Kenny Chesney thing. Like, I hope that's not horrible to say on the air. Like, well, I mean, yeah, I love people.
How long ago was it?
I think it was 19 years ago.
Okay, so it's been out there. Like,
yeah. That was more of a thing 19 years ago, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right, right. Although, in that context, probably should be up front of someone if you're going to get married to him.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, if it's going to get in the way. I mean, to each their own, but, you know, let me do a live.
All right, yeah, save me.
Let me do a few. 234 DGS on KMOX. If you're listening to 1120 and it doesn't come in real well on your car or your home radio, you can listen to 98.7 FM, which I always say is strong between the rivers along the 40 corridor. But the other day when I was driving to KU to move Phoebe back, I got pretty far out there. And of course the Odyssey app is the best place to listen because it is absolutely pristine, perfect sound, which we've come to accustomed to, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're more demanding. Stairway to Kevin.
All right. So do you guys, I'm sure you guys get it. I know we talk about it every once in a while, but do you guys get on your TikTok streams? Do you get, the Generation Wars thing?
Not really.
No?
Not
so. Do you
much.
Get a lot of that? I get a lot of it, maybe because I watched a couple of videos and now I get them.
Now they're like, you're the Generation Wars guy.
One of the big things now is like Gen Z kids saying things about Gen X, like you're actually the worst, blah, blah. But then it becomes millennials and others saying, just don't mess with Gen X. Just don't do it. And then they list these reasons why. And as I was watching some of them last night, I realized that I might be the prototypical Gen Xer. Like, I might be the, I don't know what you call it, not the standard, but like...
Poster boy.
Like the
prototype.
Yeah, the maybe the one that best fits the descriptions that they give, right? Mm-hmm. So the way that they do this, like the characteristics of Gen X is you're very independent because you basically grew up on your own. You know, you had a lot of freedom. You know how to handle your, you know, like, you know how to fix problems when they come up because you had to do it yourself. You were outside all the time. You like and are not afraid of and sometimes even like confrontation. Not afraid to tell someone when they're full of it or when they're being stupid or whatever. Don't care that much about people criticizing you. and as they're going through all this, I'm like, I'm checking every one of these boxes. Like, I don't care if somebody gets mad at me or if they criticize my gender. Go ahead. Be upset about it.
I've never said this. I think maybe Gen X had the best parents.
Boy, you know, we're in an interesting balanced position, right?
Because the things you're talking about, being independent.
Resilience,
not really caring what people say about you. That comes from good parenting.
Yeah. I mean, and the joke is that basically we were unraised.
Right.
You know, like you're latchkey kids and you're free to roam the neighborhood as a kid. Nobody knew where you were all of the time. But maybe in some ways that creates some balance. That's not to say that Gen X doesn't have problems. Every generation has its own things. But I was just laughing at the descriptions that the millennial kids, because it was always millennial children of Gen Xers, who are like, just don't pick fights with them because they like to fight. Like they like their games used to be making each other cry. Like they used to pick on each other face to face, not online, not like. And I'm like thinking about it as it goes. I'm like, well, yeah. I mean, it pretty much rings true for me across the board. And I think it's true as a generation. As much as you can generalize about 25 to 50 million people, right? Like 25% of the population. So really, it's more like, you know, 80 million, 90 million people.
Don't you think, and I'm not an expert on the generations, but it feels like the last four generations, boomers, X, millennials, and Z, are far more different than the four before that. And I'm sure every generation thinks differently.
Yeah.
And I think it's because, like, my parenting was probably not a lot different than my grandparents were parented. But it really changed with my generation.
Yeah.
We became softies. And that's why I'm saying, like, I'm parenting millennials.
Right.
But the Gen Xers may have had the best sets of parents.
That may be true. And I think part of it, too, is that the world is changing faster.
Yes.
And that's why the generations are so much different. You know, for how many thousands
decades.
Of years,
well, yeah.
The world didn't change that much. But if you just go from like early, let's talk about growing up in the United States, because it's only this whole process has only been around for what now? Is it we coming up on 250 years? Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
We're coming up. Is that only 2 years away?
Yeah.
1976 was, I remember the bicentennial. So yeah, we're right about there. So, you know, we're 250 years old. For the first, 150 years? Probably wasn't a lot of change from one generation to the next,
right.
And how the world was.
Right.
And then you get into the modern times. And maybe we start this around World War I, but like from World War I and what that was, the worst war in the history of the world, more deaths, more violence, more, you know, like horrific violence. Yeah. When you mentioned those movies, the World War I movies.
Yeah.
Terrifying. And then right from that, not long after that, you got the Great Depression. Right after that, you're getting into World War II, and you can see the escalation of technology and how it's more global and not local, right? And then you're getting into the space race, and you're getting into, you know, the internet and like and everything. So each generation now, I think, is significantly more different in terms of the world they grow up in.
Yeah.
And right now, my generation is probably the sweet spot. We are not our parents when it comes to technology. We're good with it. We grew up with video games and cable TV, and we were still like my age. I was in college when I got email and when the internet became a thing. So I wasn't 50 years old when that happened. So we're kind of in that mix of where we're pretty cool with all of it. So, and we experienced the pre-internet and now the internet generations.
Until now, boomers have been the Darth Vaders. You know,
right, these stupid boomers,
you ruined it for everybody.
Right.
And it seems lately that people are softening on that, or maybe they're just irrelevant.
Not quite yet to the degree, I mean, not quite yet irrelevant because so many of them still hold seats of power. I would say the one thing that our generation, mine, you know, Gen X, has not been able to do is crack that glass ceiling in the world of politics.
What do you think about that? I forget what it was apropos of, but I watched someone just last night making this point, saying that the boomers will not leave. They won't leave their jobs. They won't sell their houses. They won't this. Basically, a Gen Zer complaining that they won't make room for anyone else. Is that a valid criticism, or is it, hey, they're living their life. If they want to work till they're 80, they'll work till they're 80.
It shouldn't be a criticism. It should just be an observation, right? Like, because people are healthier longer than ever before. So if you're in your 70s and you feel good and you want to do things and you don't want to get out, I understand that. I think it's a criticism when it comes to the seats of power in politics. I think at some point you need to get out of the way. But I don't think that's true for the general person. Like, if you're a productive worker and you like what you're doing, why not do it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and maybe I'm biased because I see a lot of great people in our line of work, a lot of great broadcasters that are in their 70s and sometimes even 80s. Like, Vince Scully was amazing well into his 80s. And maybe that's part of why I think that way. But I do think for decision-making, policy-making positions, it would be ideal if one generation didn't hold it for 50 or 60 years. It would be better if you had more of a rotation going in
if
there.
If it reflected the general population.
Yeah, and I might even argue that in the executive class as well. When we're talking about CEOs and board members of major industry and things like that, it would probably be better for everybody if there was some cycling through that. But, I mean, most of us are just normies. Most of us aren't in those positions. I don't think I would criticize anyone who is of whatever age because, you're healthier longer now than ever before, and that's probably never going to change. So what's that going to mean for X? Mm-hmm. What's it going to mean for millennials when you guys are probably 90 and 90 is the new 80
right.
and 80 is the new 70, you know, like it's going to keep going in that way. So it's, I'd say be careful of what you're criticizing because that may be you in 50 years.
Also one of these days, I mean, do you really think that 100 years from now people will be getting Social Security?
No.
So at some point retiring at 62 or 65 is just not going to be a thing.
Yeah. And again, keeping in mind that when people were regularly, when the retirement ages were set, people didn't live very much longer past that.
73, 74.
Where now the age range has gone up, thankfully. I mean, it's good. You know, we all have our parents and grandparents around a lot longer, and hopefully we'll all be around a lot longer, but that's an adjustment that everybody's going to have to make in the world.
Our conversation with Ricky Horton is brought to you by Goodwill. Give hope, give local, give Goodwill.
Welcome back to Time to Talk to our pal Rick Horton. Hey, Rick.
Hey, how are you, Dave? What's going on?
Good, buddy. Man, I've been dying to talk to you about this Wilson Contreras controversy. Wheels has been big on it on his Twitter, and people, the Cardinals are such idiots, and I can't believe they've done this. And Wheels has taken the position like, hey, them and every other team, and it's a strategy, and this is the one in the million. What do you think?
I am stunned that it's a controversy, frankly, because every team is doing it. Wheels is exactly right. And I think the comment went out and said that the Cardinals were trying to get Wilson Contreras to move closer to the plate. People took it and they ran with it. That's the way I see it. And realized, oh, the Cardinals are doing this. No, baseball is doing this. There have been so many catcher's interference. We're on pace for 150 of them. And about 10 years ago, there was only 50 the entire season. Every catcher is doing it because of the way the rules are. You're trying to steal strikes in the bottom part of the zone. 30 teams are teaching that, and it has risk-reward to it. And unfortunately, we got the risk big time with Wilson, which is really hard to deal with.
Yeah, the reaction I get from people is, well, people, they have to know it's not worth the risk. And I said, okay, listen, there's more than 500,000 pitches thrown every season. So since this became a thing with the catcher's interferences increasing 2022, 2023 through now, there have been more than 1,000,000 pitches thrown, and there's one broken arm. Most teams and players will take that those odds if they're getting the game-by-game benefit of changing a few at-bats here and there. Because, as you know, Rick, the difference between a 1-0 count and an 0-1 count is 200 points of OPS. You know, like
how about the risk of how about the risk of standing 60 feet away from a guy that hits about 110 miles an hour right at your coconut? I mean, and trust me, I felt the brunt of that risk a couple of times.
Yeah,
fortunately, it wasn't anything negative, but yeah, I mean, there's certainly risk of playing. And now I do think that baseball is going to have to try to figure out a way to, and Miles Michaelis had some ideas on that. And I think this is true in the controversy, is to say maybe baseball can curtail catchers kind of getting so close for their own benefit, because once you curtail it, then there's no advantage one team to the next. And honestly, it's going to usher in eventually the automatic balls and strikes.
Right.
That's going to be the answer to it. And that's probably coming sooner than later.
So, Rick, we know you got to scoot a little early today. Give us a little preview of the Brewers.
Well, they've been out kicking.
234 DGS on KMOX. If you're listening to 1120 and it doesn't come in real well on your car or your home radio, you can listen to 98.7 FM, which I always say is strong between the rivers along the 40 corridor. But the other day when I was driving to KU to move Phoebe back, I got pretty far out there. And of course the Odyssey app is the best place to listen because it is absolutely pristine, perfect sound, which we've come to accustomed to, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're more demanding. Stairway to Kevin.
All right. So I'm sure you guys get it. I know we talk about it every once in a while, but do you guys get on your TikTok streams? Do you get, the Generation Wars thing?
Not really.
No?
Not so
you
much.
Get a lot of that? I get a lot of it, maybe because I watched a couple of videos and now I get them.
Now they're like, you're the Generation Wars guy.
one of the big things now is like Gen Z kids saying things about Gen X, like you're actually the worst, blah, blah. But then it becomes millennials and others saying, just don't mess with Gen X. Just don't do it. And then they list these reasons why. And as I was watching some of them last night, I realized that I might be the prototypical Gen Xer. Like, I might be the, I don't know what you call it, not the standard, but like...
Poster boy.
Like the
prototype.
Yeah, the maybe the one that best fits the descriptions that they give, right? Mm-hmm. So the way that they do this, like the characteristics of Gen X is you're very independent because you basically grew up on your own. You know, you had a lot of freedom. You know how to handle your, you know, like, you know how to fix problems when they come up because you had to do it yourself. You were outside all the time. You like and are not afraid of and sometimes even like confrontation. Not afraid to tell someone when they're full of it or when they're being stupid or whatever. Don't care that much about people criticizing you. and as they're going through all this, I'm like, I'm checking every one of these boxes. Like, I don't care if somebody gets mad at me or if they criticize my gender. Go ahead. Be upset about it.
I've never said this. I think maybe Gen X had the best parents.
Boy, you know, we're in an interesting balanced position, right?
Because the things you're talking about, being independent.
Resilience,
not really caring what people say about you. That comes from good parenting.
Yeah. I mean, and the joke is that basically we were unraised.
Right.
You know, like you're latchkey kids and you're free to roam the neighborhood as a kid. Nobody knew where you were all of the time. But maybe in some ways that creates some balance. That's not to say that Gen X doesn't have problems. Every generation has its own things. But I was just laughing at the descriptions that the millennial kids, because it was always millennial children of Gen Xers, who are like, just don't pick fights with them because they like to fight. Like they like their games used to be making each other cry. Like they used to pick on each other face to face, not online, not like. And I'm like thinking about it as it goes. I'm like, well, yeah. I mean, it pretty much rings true for me across the board, and I think it's true as a generation. As much as you can generalize about 25 to 50 million people, right? Like 25% of the population. So really it's more like, you know, 80 million, 90 million people.
Don't you think, and I'm not an expert on the generations, but it feels like the last four generations, boomers, X, millennials, and Z are far more different than the four before that. And I'm sure every generation thinks differently.
Yeah.
But, and I think it's because, like, my parenting was probably not a lot different than my grandparents were parented. But it really changed with my generation.
Yeah.
We became softies. And that's why I'm saying, like, I'm parenting millennials.
Right.
But the Gen Xers may have had the best sets of parents.
It may, again, just generalizing that may be true. And I think part of it, too, is that the world is changing faster.
Yes.
And that's why the generations are so much different. You know, for how many thousands
decades.
Of years,
well, yeah.
The world didn't change that much. But if you just go from like early, let's talk about the, like growing up in the United States, because it's, you know, it's only, this whole process has only been around for what now? Is it, we coming up on 250 years? Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
We're coming up, is that only 2 years away?
Yeah.
1976 was, I remember the bicentennial. So yeah, we're right about there. So, you know, we're 250 years old. For the first, 150 years,
pretty
probably
standard.
Wasn't a lot of change from one generation to the next,
right.
And how the world was.
Right.
And then you get into the modern times, and maybe we start this around World War I, but like from World War I and what that was, the most, the worst war in the history of the world, more deaths, more violence, more, you know, like horrific violence. Yeah. When you mentioned those movies, the World War I movies.
Yeah.
Terrifying. And then right from that, not long after that, you got the Great Depression. Right after that, you're getting into World War II, and you can see the escalation of technology and how it's more global and not local, right? And then you're getting into the space race, and you're getting into, you know, the internet and like and everything. So each generation now, I think, is significantly more different in terms of the world they grow up in.
Yeah.
And right now, my generation is probably the sweet spot. We are not our parents when it comes to technology. We're good with it. We grew up with video games and cable TV, and we were still, like my age, I was in college when I got email and when the internet became a thing. So I wasn't 50 years old when that happened. So we're kind of in that mix of where we're pretty cool with all of it. So, and we experienced the pre-internet and now the internet generations.
Until now, boomers have been the Darth Vaders. You know,
right, these stupid boomers.
You ruined it for everybody.
Right.
And it seems lately that people are softening on that, or maybe they're just irrelevant.
Not quite yet to the degree. I mean, not quite yet irrelevant because so many of them still hold seats of power. I would say the one thing that our generation, mine, you know, Gen X, has not been able to do is crack that glass ceiling in the world of politics.
What do you think about that? I forget what it was apropos of, but I watched someone just last night making this point, saying that the boomers will not leave. They won't leave their jobs. They won't sell their houses. They won't this. Basically, a Gen Zer complaining that they won't make room for anyone else. Is that a valid criticism, or is it, hey, they're living their life, and they want to work till they're 80, they'll work till they're 80?
It shouldn't be a criticism. It should just be an observation, right? Like, because people are healthier longer than ever before. So if you're in your 70s and you feel good and you want to do things and you don't want to get out, I understand that. I think it's a criticism when it comes to the seats of power in politics. I think at some point you need to get out of the way. But I don't think that's true for the general person. Like, if you're a productive worker and you like what you're doing, why not do it? Mm-hmm. You know, and maybe I'm biased because I see a lot of great people in our line of work, a lot of great broadcasters that are in their 70s and sometimes even 80s. Like, Vince Scully was amazing well into his 80s. And maybe that's part of why I think that way. But I do think for decision-making, policy-making positions, it would be ideal if one generation didn't hold it for 50 or 60 years. It would be better if you had more of a rotation going in
there.
If
it reflected the general population.
Yeah, and I might even argue that in the executive class as well. When we're talking about CEOs and board members of major industry and things like that, it would probably be better for everybody if there was some cycling through that. But, I mean, most of us are just normies. Most of us aren't in those positions. I don't think I would criticize anyone who is of whatever age. Because you're healthier longer now than ever before, and that's probably never going to change. So what's that going to mean for X? Mm-hmm. What's it going to mean for millennials when you guys are probably 90 and 90 is the new 80?
Right.
And 80 is the new 70? You know, like it's going to keep going in that way. So I'd say be careful of what you're criticizing, because that may be you in 50 years.
Also, one of these days, I mean, do you really think that 100 years from now people will be getting Social Security?
No.
So at some point, retiring at 62 or 65 is just not going to be a thing.
Yeah. And again, keeping in mind that when people were regularly, when the retirement ages were set, people didn't live very much longer past that.
73, 74.
Where now the age range has gone up, thankfully. I mean, it's good. You know, we all have our parents and grandparents around a lot longer, and hopefully we'll all be around a lot longer, but yeah, that's an adjustment that everybody's going to have to make in the world.
Our conversation with Ricky Horton is brought to you by Goodwill. Give hope, give local, give Goodwill.
Welcome back to Time to Talk to our pal Rick Horton. Hey, Rick.
Hey, how are you, Dave? What's going on?
Good, buddy. Man, I've been dying to talk to you about this Wilson Contreras controversy. Wheels has been big on it on his Twitter, and people, oh, the Cardinals are such idiots, and I can't believe they've done this. And Wheels has taken the position like, hey, them and every other team, and it's a strategy, and this is the one in the million. What do you think?
I am stunned that it's a controversy, frankly, because every team is doing it. Wheels is exactly right. And I think the comment went out and said that the Cardinals were trying to get Wilson Contreras to move closer to the plate. People took it and they ran with it. That's the way I see it. And realized, oh, the Cardinals are doing this. No, baseball is doing this. There have been so many catcher's interference. We're on pace for 150 of them. And about 10 years ago, there was only 50 the entire season. Every catcher is doing it because of the way the rules are. You're trying to steal strikes in the bottom part of the zone. 30 teams are teaching that. And it has risk reward to it, and unfortunately, we got the risk big time with Wilson, which is really hard to deal with.
Yeah, the reaction I get from people is, well, people, they have to know it's not worth the risk. And I said, okay, listen, there's more than 500,000 pitches thrown every season. So since this became a thing with the catcher's interferences increasing 2022, 2023 through now, there have been more than 1 million pitches thrown, and there's one broken arm. Most teams and players will take that those odds if they're getting the game-by-game benefit of changing a few at-bats here and there. Because, as you know, Rick, the difference between a 1-0 count and an 0-1 count is 200 points of OPS. You know, like
how about the risk of and how about the risk of standing 60 feet of away from a guy that hits about 110 miles an hour riding your coconut? I mean, and trust me, I felt the brunt of that risk a couple of times.
Yeah,
fortunately,
yeah.
It wasn't anything negative, but yeah, I mean, there's certainly risk of playing. And now, I do think that baseball is going to have to try to figure out a way to. And Miles Michaelis had some ideas on that, and I think this is true in the controversy is to say maybe baseball can curtail. Catchers kind of getting so close for their own benefit, because once you curtail it, then there's no advantage one team to the next. And honestly, it's going to usher in eventually the automatic balls and strikes.
Right.
That's going to be the answer to it. And that's probably coming sooner than later.
So, Rick, we know you got to scoot a little early today. Give us a little preview of the Brewers.
Well, the Brewers are, they've been out kicking their coverage all year. I mean, they're really offensively very, very good. They've got, Peralta, other good pitchers in their rotation too. And, you know, they've been a very solid team. They've overcome losing some players and haven't missed a beat. And, I still think that, the Cardinals, I think, match up very well against them. And we'll see these next 4 days. We have only played the Brewers three times. No other division game have we played all year, which is bizarre.
Yeah.
So this will be a good test these next 4 days.
All right, buddy. Have a great series.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
You know, Ricky makes a really interesting point is that, like, you run down the names and some of the numbers for the Brewers offense, and you're like, how are they so much better? But they are. Like, I mean, now they have good players. I don't want to make it sound like they don't. William Contreras, who's Wilson's mm-hmm. younger brother, has been phenomenal. He's been one of the best hitters. Actually, the two of them had been two of the best hitters in the National League so far. Willie Adames hits for power. Doesn't, you know, he strikes out a good bit. But they have some names. But Christian Yelich has been hurt most of the season. He only played like 12, 13 games, and he's just now getting back. And I list these names. You watch a lot of baseball. Do you know Bryce Terang? Do you know Blake Perkins?
Nope.
Do you know Rhys Hoskins and Sal Frelick and all that? Like, I do because I'm a nerd.
Yeah.
And I've known some of these about these guys since they were in the minor leagues. They don't have all these big names, but they're getting little bits and pieces here and there. And a couple of guys like Contreras have been really good. So, like, they don't have the big star power roster, but they are getting performance from guys. And I guess the difference, Dave, is they're young guys, complimentary guys, have been better than the Cardinals' complimentary guys. And then when you throw in, Paul Goldschmidt struggles and Nolan not really getting it going to the last two or three weeks, that's the difference in the offensive production.
Yeah, makes sense.
Which is, again, when you're looking at a lineup and you're going, man, if you're a casual fan, you're like, I don't even know who these guys are, yet they're still getting enough to win games.
Did you guys see that Peter Jackson says he's going to make another Lord of the Rings?
Yes.
Is it like a reboot?
It's about Gollum.
Oh.
It's about his journey.
Is that bad?
Yeah.
You had enough Gollum?
I mean, yeah, I had enough Gollum. I just think we have too much content nowadays. I know it's an unpopular opinion. Everyone wants as much as they can get, but I'm over here like, I got the gist. You showed me his backstory in Return of the King at the very beginning of the movie. What is it about, like, him just running around in those caves for 100 years or something?
I think, all right, so I'm trying to think of what I'm trying to find. It is the hunt for Gollum. So it might just be more about trying to find him. I don't know exactly what the context is because it's very new, but if it's Peter Jackson, it's probably going to be good.
I guess. I didn't like all the Hobbits. I'll put it that way. I thought that was too much.
Too much Hobbit?
Too much. The Hobbit is like a short children's book, and they stretched it out into three feature films.
Oh, the Hobbits.
The movie. Yeah, they made it three movies. It probably should have been two.
It probably should have been half a one.
No, it was awesome.
Rage has some opinions.
It was awesome.
I do.
The only thing that would have made it better is more wolves.
So you like the Hobbits?
I love those. Yeah. Those are my favorite books from when I was a kid.
Oh, I meant the movies.
Oh, those two, yeah. The Lord of the Rings trilogy is perfect.
I agree with that.
The Hobbit is not perfect. To me, it's good.
Who made those?
Peter Jackson.
Oh, yeah. Really?
But I think it's the nature of what Rachel's talking about is the Lord of the Rings is three separate books made into three separate movies. Mm-hmm. The Hobbit was one book that they stretch out into three movies. It's a phenomenal story, and it's great, but it's just...
What's the knock on The Hobbit?
for me, mm-hmm. for the films, it's just they just took a fun children's book and they stretched it into this big, long, epic film series. And to me, it just didn't like reflect the book very well.
I mean, it's a large book individually, but it's not the same as three large books
was
that
it
led
the first
to it.
One?
What's that? The Hobbit was first, yes. So like that would be the like when you're reading them, you read The Hobbit first. It was the first one published.
Yeah.
And then the Lord of the Rings series came afterwards. And I think that's part of it, too. I'm just going to be honest. Like, no matter what, anything that comes after a classic movie or trilogy will always be seen as less than.
I agree with that.
It will always be. Doesn't matter if it's this or Star Wars or whatever in the world.
Our conversation with Ricky Horton is brought to you by Goodwill. Give hope, give local, give Goodwill.
Welcome back. Time to talk to our pal Rick Horton. Hey, Rick.
Hey, how are you, Dave? What's going on?
Good, buddy. Man, I've been dying to talk to you about this Wilson Contreras controversy. Wheels has been big on it on his Twitter, and people, the Cardinals are such idiots, and I can't believe they've done this. And Wheels has taken the position like, hey, them and every other team, and it's a strategy, and this is the one in the million. What do you think?
I am stunned that it's a controversy, frankly, because every team is doing it. Wheels is exactly right. And I think the comment went out and said that the Cardinals were trying to get Wilson Contreras to move closer to the plate. People took it and they ran with it. That's the way I see it. And realized, oh, the Cardinals are doing this. No, baseball is doing this. There have been so many catcher's interference. We're on pace for 150 of them. And about 10 years ago, there was only 50 the entire season. Every catcher is doing it because of the way the rules are. You're trying to steal strikes in the bottom part of the zone. 30 teams are teaching that. And it has risk reward to it, and unfortunately, we got the risk big time with Wilson, which is really hard to deal with.
Yeah, the reaction I get from people is, well, people they have to know it's not worth the risk. And I said, okay, listen, there's more than 500,000 pitches thrown every season. So since this became a thing with the catcher's interferences increasing 2022, 2023 through now, there have been more than 1,000,000 pitches thrown, and there's one broken arm. Most teams and players will take that those odds if they're getting the game-by-game benefit of changing a few at-bats here and there. Because, as you know, Rick, the difference between a 1-0 count and an 0-1 count is 200 points of OPS. You know, like
how about the risk of and how about the risk of standing 60 feet of away from a guy that hits the ball 110 miles an hour right at your coconut? I mean, and trust me, I felt the brunt of that risk a couple of times.
Yeah,
fortunately,
yeah.
It wasn't anything negative, but yeah, I mean, there's certainly risk of playing. And now, I do think that baseball is going to have to try to figure out a way to. And Miles Michaelis had some ideas on that, and I think this is true in the controversy is to say maybe baseball can curtail catchers kind of getting so close for their own benefit, because once you curtail it, then there's no advantage one team to the next. And honestly, it's going to usher in eventually the automatic balls and strikes. That's
right.
Going to be the answer to it. And that's probably coming sooner than later.
So Rick, we know you got to scoot a little early today. Give us a little preview of the Brewers.
Well, the Brewers are, they've been out kicking their coverage all year. I mean, they're really offensively very, very good. They've got, Peralta, other good pitchers in their rotation too. And, you know, they've been a very solid team. They've overcome losing some players and haven't missed a beat. And, I still think that, the Cardinals, I think, match up very well against them. And we'll see these next 4 days. We have only played the Brewers three times. No other division game have we played all year, which is bizarre.
Yeah.
So this will be a good test these next 4 days.
All right, buddy. Have a great series.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
You know, Ricky makes a really interesting point is that like you run down the names and some of the numbers for the Brewers offense, and you're like, how are they so much better? But they are. Like, I mean, now they have good players. I don't want to make it sound like they don't. William Contreras, who's Wilson's mm-hmm. younger brother, has been phenomenal. He's been one of the best hitters. Actually, the two of them had been two of the best hitters in the National League so far. Willie Adames hits for power. He strikes out a good bit. But they have some names. But Christian Yelich has been hurt most of the season. He only played like 12, 13 games, and he's just now getting back. And I list these names. You watch a lot of baseball. Do you know Bryce Terang? Do you know Blake Perkins?
Nope.
Do you know Rhys Hoskins and Sal Frelick and all that? Like, I do because I'm a nerd.
Yeah.
And I've known some of these about these guys since they were in the minor leagues. They don't have all these big names, but they're getting little bits and pieces here and there. And a couple of guys like Contreras have been really good. So, like, they don't have the big star power roster, but they are getting performance from guys. And I guess the difference, Dave, is their young guys, complimentary guys, have been better than the Cardinals' complimentary guys. And then when you throw in, you know, Paul Goldschmidt's struggles and Nolan not really getting it going to the last two or three weeks, that's the difference in the offensive production.
Yeah, makes sense.
Which is, it's, you know, again, when you're looking at a lineup and you're going, man, I don't, if you're a casual fan, you're like, I don't even know who these guys are, yet they're still getting enough to win games.
Did you guys see that Peter Jackson says he's going to make another Lord of the Rings?
Yes.
Is it like a reboot?
No, it's about Gollum.
Oh.
It's about his journey.
Is that bad?
You had enough Gollum?
I mean, yeah, I had enough Gollum. I just think we have too much content nowadays. I know it's an unpopular opinion. Everyone wants as much as they can get, but I'm over here like, I got the gist. You showed me his backstory in Return of the King at the very beginning of the movie. What is it about, like, him just running around in those caves for 100 years or something?
I think, all right, so I'm trying to think of what I'm trying to define. It is the hunt for Gollum. So it might just be more about trying to find him. I don't know exactly what the context is because it's very new, but if it's Peter Jackson, it's probably going to be good.
I guess. I didn't like all the Hobbits. I'll put it that way. I thought that was too much.
Too much Hobbit?
Too much. The Hobbit is like a short children's book, and they stretched it out into three feature films. Hobbits.
The movie. Yeah, they made it three movies. It probably should have been two.
It probably should have been half a one.
No, it was awesome.
Rage has some opinions.
It was awesome.
I do.
The only thing that would have made it better is more wolves.
So you like the Hobbits?
I love those. Yeah, I mean those are my favorite books from when I was a kid.
Oh, I meant the movies.
Oh, those two, yeah. The Lord of the Rings trilogy is perfect.
I agree with that.
The Hobbit is not perfect. To me, it's good.
Who made those?
Peter Jackson.
Oh, yeah. Really?
But I think it's the nature of what Rachel's talking about is the Lord of the Rings is three separate books made into three separate movies. Mm-hmm. The Hobbit was one book that they stretch out into three movies. It's a phenomenal story, and it's great, but
what's the knock on The Hobbit?
For me, mm-hmm. for the films, it's just they just took a fun children's book and they stretched it into this big, long, epic film series. And to me, it just didn't like reflect the book very well.
I mean, it's a large book individually, but it's not the same as three large books
that led to it.
What's that? The Hobbit was first, yes. So like, that would be when you're reading them, you read The Hobbit first. It was the first one published.
Yeah.
And then the Lord of the Rings series came afterwards. And I think that's part of it, too. I'm just going to be honest, like no matter what. Anything that comes after a classic movie or trilogy will always be seen as less than.
I agree with that.
It will always be. Doesn't matter if it's this or Star Wars or whatever.